Welcome to the Bomb and Gouge Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Bissell. This week, we're going to review the Ryder Cup, as well as talk about this upcoming winter in sports since golf season's coming to a close, at least in Michigan. All right, so I'd like to welcome all listeners in. So this week, I'm going to talk a little sports, a little golf, talk about the Ryder Cup. This will be more like your sports radio type episode. So, first, I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch really any of the Ryder Cup. But I do stay up with social media and, you know, I have friends who watch it and I get filled in. It's, I think it's amazing about 2018, like current landscape of just technology and everything is, you don't really have to watch anything. I mean, you get filled in on everything so quickly just via social media. And there's like really nothing. I don't watch sports very much at all. In fact, I don't really watch TV, period. Like golf-wise, I mean, I'm telling you, I don't know that I maybe watched 3 hours of golf so far in 2018. Typically for me, I will watch the British Open for an hour or two for the entire tournament. You know, I just really enjoy getting up at 5 in the morning and grabbing a cup of coffee and kind of dozing in and out of sleep while watching it. And then I'll watch about the last hour of the Masters every year. And other than that, just, you know, and the Ryder Cup's just terrible timing because we're in the middle of our season. We're gone all the time. And that weekend we had a tournament. So anyway, long story short, didn't really see any of it, heard everything. Obviously, as the U.S., we got our butts kicked, which is not surprising. And so this is where, you know, what I'm getting at is how you just stay up to date on everything. So I'm following on social media and just kind of seeing what's going on and, you know, checking every once in a while. And that's your, you know, diving back into this real quick. I do stay up to date. Like, nothing really gets by me from a standpoint of I know what's going on because of social media and everything, but also, I'm huge on statistics, so I'm always looking at stats. And like, I don't watch the PGA Tour, but I know what's going on in terms of what guys are leading what categories and doing well in what categories, and just kind of how I like to learn how guys are getting it done, you know, because that's the cool part about sports and particularly golf is just because someone's number one in the world, I like to know why they're number one in the world. What are they good at? But anyway, so looking at the Ryder Cup, I'm watching social media, and it's so funny to me to just follow social media when it comes to sporting events and watch what people are saying. Because, A, one thing I love about sports in general is everybody is an expert. And I mean everybody. Like, everyone knows what they should have done, right? And oh, this was so dumb. And like this, I'm not just talking Ryder Cup, like everything. I remember when I first got into coaching, I had this epiphany one day about really the way coaching goes. And when you're a coach, so you've got a sports team, you are criticized for everything that goes wrong, everything. And then the things you do well, it's just, well, you're supposed to. It's, you know, you're supposed to get everything right all the time. Otherwise, you're bashed for it, which that's fine. I really don't have an issue with that. Like, I can handle criticism. I like criticism. But the funny part to me, and this is what I'm getting at, like, I had this epiphany of, like, man, this is going to be a tough road because I'm from East Lansing. So I grew up around a lot of huge Michigan State fans. And, you know, a lot of my social media, the people that I follow are big Michigan State fans. In the bashing of Izzo when they lose, like, everybody knows what he should have done, apparently. You know, it's like anybody in the world could seem to be able to coach Michigan State's basketball team. Because whenever they lose, it's, oh, why would he do this? That was so dumb. Why did he do this? This is so dumb. It's like, apparently being a, you know, national championship basketball coach is really easy. Because if you just follow social media, I mean, everybody else is an expert. So if Tom Izzo is getting lambasted all over social media all the time, yeah, I figured I probably didn't have much of a chance of ever getting anything right. But So I'm following the Ryder Cup, and, you know, everyone, it's just like the part that makes me laugh is all these people bashing, you know, the captain's picks. And it's so funny, too, from the standpoint of these are captains. Like, do you really think they have much to do with anything? You know, like, these are 25 to 40-year-old players, sometimes older, right? Phil Mickelson's in his mid-40s. And all they're doing is just picking match. And then all of a sudden, like, every person in the United States, as soon as a pairing gets blasted, you know, all of a sudden it was, well, yeah, that was, why would Furyk do that? That was so stupid. I would have picked these guys. They would have won. Okay. So just everybody's an expert. Here's the reality of the situation. Everyone's frustrated why the U.S. can't win in Europe. But the fact of the matter is, it's not because captains are making poor pairings and this and that. That's not what it's about. Like, there's not some magic formula like, man, if you just pick the right pairings, everyone's going to win. No. The issue is, the Ryder Cup is extraordinarily difficult to play on the other person's turf. That's all it is. Like, it's not like it's easy to go over to Europe, play a different style of golf in front of a hostile crowd who is aggressively cheering on Europe and doesn't care about you. Like, that's not an easy situation to win in. We just think, because, you know, we're Americans and we think we should dominate everything, that it's like, we get so mad when we don't win in Europe. Like, it's fine. It's fine to not win in Europe. Like, it's really, really... Now, if you lose on your home turf over in the United States, I think as a fan, you have a right to be upset by that. You know, because based on world rankings, we have the better players. So when we have the better players and we're on our home turf and the crowd is for us, we really have no excuse not to win that. But in Europe, I mean, my gosh, like, yeah, that's so hard. Like, those crowds are going nuts, you know, only for Europe. They don't care about America. They don't want you to win. So, you know, to watch Twitter and everyone just blow up and get so upset about this, you know, I think that's another reason why I don't watch a lot of sports. I mean, I just really don't have time to. But on the other side of that, like, I watch these people get so emotional, these fans. And I don't ever want to be that person. Like, I don't want my mood to be based on the results of something I have no stake in the game whatsoever. Like, if the United States wins the Ryder Cup, that's great. I'm happy for them. I think it's cool, you know. But I'm just looking for exciting matches, right? Like, if I was going to watch it, like, that's all I really care about. I was like, give me some exciting TV. Like, it's not going to ruin my day when the United States loses. I'm not going to be all upset about it and go to Twitter and start bashing the captain and talk about these plays that someone should have made and, you know, oh, this and that. And obviously this Ryder Cup was interesting because of the drama that ensued afterward, right, with the DJ and Brooks little fight or whatever, altercation, they call it. All right, and then we obviously had Patrick Reed's comments. Why are we worried about Patrick Reed? Like, why do you even put time into that guy? All right, he's not a likable guy. All right, that's just who he is. So just accept it and stop worrying about it and don't give it attention. He has a big mouth. He likes to say things. You know, he shushes the crowd and all this other crap that he does. Who cares? Don't invest your time in it. It's not worth it. The Brooks and DJ thing, you know, these are, who knows what happened. Probably only the people that were there, and I'm sure it wasn't that serious. You know, they say Paulino was a part of it. Who knows? It's guys being dudes at the end of the day, all right? You know, every once in a while, people get a little heated, and that's what happens, all right? Who knows what it was over? Probably wasn't as big of a deal as anyone's. You know, speculation's the worst thing ever, because speculation's like a rumor, right? It just grows and grows and grows, and all of a sudden, you know, it's this big story. Dude, I don't know, but at the end of the day, it may have just been over something really, really small, and it might have been a little bit of raising voices and a shove. Big deal. All right, brothers, best friends, happens all the time. All right, things get a little emotional from time to time. Not a big deal, especially I'm assuming there was a healthy amount of alcohol involved. So we really want to blow this up. You know, it's nothing like what we saw at the UFC fight last night, which was a totally different thing. But that McGregor gets his ass kicked, and then whatever guy he was fighting, you know, jumps out of the octagon and tries to fight his jiu-jitsu coach. So that actually has some merit behind it. That's pretty wild. That's a story. This Brooks DJ thing, I don't think that's much of a story. But so, you know, I guess the main thing I'm getting at, I think we get a little too emotional about the Ryder Cup, especially when it's in Europe. And then we think that we have the answers of why we didn't win. Dude, it's just hard to play over there. It's a totally different type of golf. You know, they're on their home turf. It's like, you know, if you're an American, the one thing you could probably relate, if you ever play golf in Florida, right? If you have a friend who lives in Florida, plays golf in Florida, and you live in the Midwest, and you go down and visit him, even if you're the better player than him by a few shots, like, he's got a good shot against you in Florida. Because the golf's different. Bermuda's very different than bent grass. It plays totally different. There are some things that you got, some tricks of the trade you got to learn about that. Playing over in Europe, same thing. Right? And I get these Americans, they've done it. They've gone over there for obviously the Open Championship and various other events over there, but not like they know over here. So just let's calm down a little bit. All right. So in other sports news, this is personal to me and great. So GV football, still undefeated. Got an undefeated season going. We match up against Ferris State this next week, which will be an ultra exciting game. I'm very excited because we're playing in Detroit next week, Detroit Mercy's event. We leave for that on Sunday, but we're going to be able to go to the game Saturday. It's at Grand Valley. So if you're around the Grand Rapids area, make sure you make it out to that. It's going to be an unbelievable game. Number 2 in the country versus number 3 in the country. Both teams are undefeated. Grand Valley's ranked number 2 in the country, and Ferris is ranked number 3 in the country. Ferris is the number 1 offense in the country. It's going to be a wild one. So you talk about a 2-3 matchup, and they happen to be rivals at the same time. So this is who knows? For all we know, this could be a national championship preview. You know, it was with D2 doing that playoff system of 16 teams. It's very possible both teams could make the playoffs and meet again in the playoffs. And wouldn't it be exciting if that happened to be the national championship? It'd be great for Michigan, great for the GLIAC. But anyway, that's exciting for me. So I'm excited for that game. Another thing I want to talk about is, so if you don't know, I'm actually a massive basketball fan. I'm probably a bigger basketball fan than I am a golf fan. I don't like basketball more, but I just think for me, like, when your job is a sport, right, coaching a sport and being involved in this sport 24/7, like, when you finally sit down to watch something for enjoyment, you almost don't want it to be that, because not that it feels like work. It does. I'm not saying when I watch golf it feels like work. It certainly doesn't. But it's just, I watch golf for a living, basically. Right? I watch people hit golf balls on a range all day, and then I coach college players and watch them play all day. I literally watch golf 8 hours a day, essentially. So I love basketball. I've always loved basketball. And I'm one of the few people that really enjoys the NBA. In fact, I like the NBA more than college basketball. Now, the reason for that is a couple things. A, I appreciate the NBA. I appreciate all professional sports, because if you've ever been around the highest level of professional athletes, you understand how unbelievable those guys are in any sport. Like, I've been around a lot of PGA Tour players, and you can't believe how good they are in person. Like, when you're up close and watching it, you just can't believe it. And, you know, that's why I love the NBA from that standpoint. Because, like, when I watch it, I don't see the same stuff a lot of people claim to see. Like, oh, they're lazy. You know, I got a lot of questions, by the way, that go a little unanswered. So, for instance, I don't buy the lazy defense thing. Do I think there's dog days in the NBA when you're a team that's 15 games below 500 halfway through the season and you know you're not making the playoffs and there's a little bit of tanking going on? Yes. And do I hate that? Of course. All right. But if you watch the top teams and the teams fighting for playoff spots, I don't see that. I don't see this lazy defense everybody speaks of. Like, of course, yes, there's a couple plays throughout any given game, but for the most part, I don't see that. And so the question I would pose to you, if you really believe that, and you get the people, oh, the 90s basketball was better, right? They played harder, blah, blah, blah. Okay, here's a question for you. Teams, the trend's actually starting to reverse now, so in the last few years. So it's not really applicable just right now, but certainly through most of the 2000s, the average scores of games were lower than in the 90s and 80s, right, in terms of total score. So less points are being scored. So are you going to tell me players in the 2000s are less offensively skilled than players in the 80s and 90s? And the so the defense was better in the 80s and 90s, but yet they scored more points. And I just passed, look in the eye test, players are quite a bit more skilled offensively, right? We human evolution, like we don't work backwards. All right, in any sport, today's athletes are better than they were in the past. That's just this way it is, right? Like LeBron James would have played center in the 80s. Well, I don't know what he would have done because he just wouldn't have fit in with those people at all. He barely fits in with the people now. But we move forward as humans. We don't move backward. So that, but this could easily lead into a greatest of all time thing because that's something people love to debate all the time. I don't do that stuff. I do just, dude, it's the, all you have is the era that you played in. So who is the greatest of every era? Like the Jordan LeBron debate, whoo, man. It's a good one. I really think it is. I think Kareem's in that discussion too, by the way. I don't know why he never gets in that discussion. It's kind of ridiculous. Like, if you look at statistics, because what do we judge the greatest players of all time? We judge them on stats, MVPs, right? Awards, various awards, and then championships. Well, Kareem's got all those. And he does just about, you know, he stacks up pretty nicely against Jordan in all those. So, but for some reason we never include Kareem, but you know, LeBron versus Jordan, like I don't get into that discussion very much and I don't have a definitive GOAT quote unquote, right? It's just, it's different eras. Guys were different. Like I can tell you in my opinion, I think LeBron would have absolutely dominated beyond belief in the 90s. All right. But he's playing in just a different era. Like, it just, I don't know. Like, Jordan was so dominant against what he had to compare himself to, and that's all you can ask, right? So, like, if a guy's the best, like, would Jordan be the best if he played now? That's a really weird question to answer because on one end, like, if he just is who he was in the 90s, then I don't think he would be. But I also think Jordan, like, with his athleticism and the way he approached the game, like I think he would have adapted and become a different player in today's game, right? Because he was the best player in that era where the game was a little slower and it was a little more based around in the paint and mid-range, where today's game is obviously, you know, pace and space and a lot of threes and smaller lineups. And I think he would, you know, if he came in now, he would have just been a different player. I don't think he would have been necessarily worse. He just would have been a different player, right? He would have shot more threes and he would have used his speed a little more and not so much of his strength. You know, that was a big, you know, a big part of Jordan's game was the post game. And he probably would have been a little more, you know, and he probably would have been great at that too. But anyway, looking at this NBA season, all right, because I'm excited for it. So if you're not, sorry, but I'm going to talk about it. So obviously, one thing that sucks is Golden State added Cousins. So that kind of just ruins the entire NBA season because everybody knows who's going to win the NBA championship. Or do we? Because here's my hot take. I think the Celtics can beat the Warriors in a 7-game series. And it's weird because when I first started thinking this, I thought, you're insane, Gary. Like, that's crazy. But when I look at how they match up, I really think it's possible. One thing that I think where the Celtics have an edge is their bench. So I think that helps. You talk about, you know, 7-game series at the end of the year, and you know, guys are a little more worn down, and you know, I think those bench minutes can be a big deal. I think their bench is better, which really helps. What it will come down to me, and well, maybe be able to validate this take: how good is Hayward going to be? Is he going to be the player he was with the Jazz, or was this ankle? You know, the things I've read about, like, it sounds like his ankle was a pretty clean break. So I don't know that it was, at least things that I've read, who knows, but it doesn't sound like it was too complicated. He should make a full recovery, and hopefully he's fully recovered by now. But if he can be that same player, I really like them. I really do. I think from this standpoint, I just look at the matchups, right? Because what basketball really is a series of matchups, right? You can take the team, and yes, how the team works together and the chemistry and this and that is very important. That's a huge part. But I like to look at it too from just one-on-one versus through the lineup, right? Which at times, once again, based on, you know, what types of offense people run and this and that and their chemistry together and how they move the ball and basically the flow of their offense, that sometimes doesn't matter. You know, you can be outmatched but play a much better brand of basketball and still be the better team. But just looking at matchups, first of all, I think Kyrie is the one point guard. Like, if you were to ask me who's better, Curry or Kyrie, I take Curry. Yet, Kyrie has a way of outplaying Curry when they match up against each other. And he's really the only point guard that seems to outplay Curry when they play each other. But, like, against the other 29 teams, Curry's the better player night in, night out. But just when those two seem to match up, I think Kyrie's got a personal vendetta for that matchup, you know, because Curry's pretty unanimously known as the best point guard in the league. And I think Kyrie takes that personally and, you know, brings his best when he plays Curry. And so I think on that end, you've got a solid matchup there at point guard. I think that matchup's 50-50. I really think Kyrie can get the edge there, or at least, you know, negate the advantage that is normally Curry. And you look at Thompson, Jaylen Brown at the two guard. Jaylen Brown's a phenomenal defender. Klay's really hard to guard. He's so good at moving without the ball. You know, when he gets a shot off so quick, I don't know that you can completely contain him, but if there's a guy that can keep up with him and running around those screens and try and get a hand in his face and body him a little bit, I think Jaylen Brown's that guy. You know, one advantage Klay has is he's bigger than most 2 yards. He's not bigger than Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown's bigger than him and far more athletic. So I like him there. You know, it's a 3 spot. Okay, here's where you have a massive edge. And this is where, you know, odds are the Warriors win that 7-game series. I'm just saying, I think the Celtics have a chance is Durant versus Hayward. Hayward's a great player. He's not even close to the stature. I mean, Durant is, he's arguably the greatest scorer of all time, and he's become a great defender. That's really where Warriors separate themselves. You know, getting Durant was so huge. But, you know, going to the 4 spot, and I guess this is where it can go back and forth, right? And a lot of what I'm banking on is Jason Tatum, right? Because they're going to play this small lineup, the Celtics, supposedly, or I think they are. If Jason Tatum's what I think he's going to be, that's where I think the Celtics maybe have a chance in this, because I think Jason Tatum has a chance to be a top five small forward already. Like, seeing what he did last year in the playoffs, he's just fearless. And he's a great player. He's so well-rounded. He does everything well. And he seems like a real student of the game, which is the thing I really appreciate about him, why I believe in him so much and think he's going to be such a great player already, even in his second year. I think he's going to be, you know, perennial all-star. Because he just seems, everything that I've seen from him and read about him, he really has that drive to be one of the all-time greats, and he wants to learn from the all-time greats, and that's what all the all-time greats do, right? They seek out the advice of the ones who came before them, and they study the ones who came before them, and they tailor their game and try to get good that way. So I think Jason Tatum, he's a better player than Draymond Green. I really think that. And then at the five spot, you got to think about this. DeMarcus Cousins coming off of a torn Achilles. That is one of the most serious injuries. All right, now, great news for Cousins. His game's not built on speed and explosiveness. So probably won't affect him that much, but could be a factor. And Al Horford is also underrated. He's really good. All right, he's small. Cousins has the size matchup there, but they're similar players. You know, Horford's a great rebounder for his size. He can hold his own against anybody. You know, he can post up. He can shoot the three. He does a lot of things really well. And he's a great defender. So I see some matchups here. And then once again, the advantage of the Celtics, I think, is their bench. So when it goes on to those 10, 12 minutes a game that the starters aren't in, they might be able to get a few points back there. All right, so not saying they're going to win, and now if I had to place a bet, I would never take them. I just think it just wouldn't surprise me. Like, if the finals comes down to those two teams, I could see it. Like, if the Celtics won, I think they would win in seven games. They certainly wouldn't blow, you know, it'd have to be every game's tight and they just out-grit the Warriors. That's the other way I can see them do it. They just seem like a grittier team, right? A grittier personality of a team. Horford's got a chip on his shoulder and a lot of grit to him. Jaylen Brown is that way. Tatum's that way. You know, Kyrie's that way against Curry. He doesn't seem to be that way all the time, but against Curry, he's that way. So we'll see. The other two teams I want to talk about really quick. I like how my golf podcast is this week. I did put in the description of this podcast, there's randomness, and it is sports talk. So this is the week of randomness. We just did a little quick Ryder Cup thing, and now we're just going to talk NBA because I'm getting excited. It's October, and it's coming up. All right. The other big thing this season, right, is the Lakers. So LeBron goes to the Lakers, and that's a lot of the talk. They're not going to be good. All right, I'm not trying to be Skip Bayless and just sit here and say, you know, I know all these things because I am a nobody and never played basketball at a high level at all, but I'm going to sit here and act like I know what I'm talking about. Yep, I'm going to be Skip Bayless right now. I don't see how the Lakers could be very good this year. Like, everyone's like, oh, they're going to be the, you know, fourth best team in the West, third or fourth best. No, how? What do you? Yes, they have LeBron James. Yes, they have the best player in the NBA. And LeBron can carry a team a long, long ways. There's no doubt about that. Right? But I think the only way they're a good team is if they make some trades. I was looking at this current roster. It makes no sense. Mostly because of who your two point guards are. Not just one. You have Lonzo Ball and Rajon Rondo with LeBron James. LeBron is the point guard, the scorer. He's everything. He needs the ball in his hand all the time. Lonzo and Rajon cannot operate off the ball. They are not spot-up shooters. And the only things they are good at on offense is handling the ball and creating for others. So now you either put the ball in LeBron's hands, which you should, because that's what he's debatably the best of all time at, is having the ball in his hands and creating offense, whether it's through passing or scoring, but he needs the ball in his hands. And then you just have a fifth body out there that's useless in Rondo or Ball. They can't shoot at all off the catch. All right, so you got a fifth body out there that's useless, or you put it in Lonzo or Rajon's hands, and then you turn LeBron into a spot-up shooter or a cutter, whatever. And yeah, he's going to be good at those things, but he's not going to be what he is, right? He's not going to be the best player in the NBA doing those things because he's not Klay Thompson and he's not Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. Like, those guys can operate off the ball, and that's what makes the Warriors so special, right? You got three guys who are good with the ball in their hands, but they're also amazing with it out of their hands. And, you know, LeBron's not really that guy. Like, he's a good shooter, but he's not an elite shooter like Durant, Curry, and Thompson are. So I just don't know how that's going to work. It confuses me. The one area I think they will be really good, and maybe they can be a decent team, right? Like the sixth seed, as I think they're going to be really good defensively. Lonzo's long, right? Lanky defender. Same with Rondo. Caldwell Pope. I remember him when he was with the Pistons. He was our best defender when he was with the Pistons. So I know he can defend. Obviously, LeBron, when he wants to, is an elite defender. And then Brandon Ingram, once again, really long. Like, I don't know how you're going to move the ball against them. Like, that team is so lanky. Like, that team's got to have one of the longest wingspans in the NBA, right? If you take their starting five and just did their on JaVale McGee. In fact, who could come close? The Sixers could probably come close on wingspan. I don't know who else. I mean, that average wingspan on that team is crazy. And they're all pretty good, known as pretty good defenders as well. You know, JaVale McGee is a defense first guy, shot blocker. You know, Brandon Ingram's known as a pretty decent defender for a young player. We know about LeBron, and then Rondo and Ball are the same player, right? They're distributor defensive specialists, and Caldwell Pope's kind of a 3-and-D guy. So they will be good defensively. But people with these hopes of to say the question, could the Lakers knock off the Warriors? Give me a break. I don't think anyone who knows basketball at all really thinks that. But I'll be curious to see what they do with that point guard position. I want to see it a little bit and see what they're gonna do there, because to me, looking at it, I don't know how that works and makes any sense. But last thing I want to talk about. I will stop trying to be Mr. NBA. I know it's not my area of expertise. I just love the NBA. All right. My Detroit Pistons. Right? I've always been a big Detroit sports fan through and through, all sports. We're dead in the water, people. That's just the way it is. We are toast because we've spent a ton of money on Blake Griffin. A ton. And I just don't know how we're going to make that work. It's great to have, if you can call Blake Griffin a star, right? He was a star for a couple years until all the injuries happened. When we first did it, what was funny is I like this move. It's not going to make us good, but it's going to put people in the stands, which Detroit has a huge issue with. And it didn't. I was shocked by that. Like, some of these pictures from last year of Little Caesars Arena during games is flat out embarrassing. I mean, there's no one at these Pistons games. Like, we got Blake Griffin, and you're not going to go to the games? Like, he's one of the most exciting players in the NBA, because at any moment you could see a dunk that you'll remember for the rest of your life. But people don't go. It's pretty sad. But here's just my take on it, and I don't know what their plans are. You know, I'm not in that organization, obviously, and, maybe they've got some elaborate plan here of how they're going to make this work, but Blake Griffin scares me getting all that money, because when you tie up that much money into someone who cannot carry a team single-handedly, I don't know how you expect to ever compete for a championship. Like, here's where I agree with the move. It's like, okay, we got a star-ish player. All right, a guy who's at least a top 20 player in the NBA, probably. All right, so we got a star-ish player, to add a little bit of excitement if you can build around him. But when he's getting the money he's getting, I don't know how you build around him, right? Because he's getting so much money based on your salary cap, but like, he has to be the star. You certainly can never be a title contender if Blake Griffin's your number one option. So from that standpoint, I just don't really get it. Like, I see it was an improvement over what we had, kind of. I really like Tobias Harris, though. I think he's really underrated. But, man, it's just like when you pay him all that money, like, you can't go out and get a guy that's better than him now, really. I don't know how you could, right? Because you don't have enough money. Like, there's only five or six guys that – in the NBA where you go, okay, any amount, we got to pay them. And they're worth it. right? Blake Griffin, he's getting like top five player in the league money, and he's not even close to a top five player in the league. So for me, like, okay, Steph Curry, you do whatever it takes to keep him on your team. Kevin Durant, LeBron James, James Harden. Those guys, you certainly pay them any amount it takes, because those guys, and I would actually put Davis, Anthony Davis, and Giannis in that category too. So I think there's probably six guys. I think those six guys, and I would have said Kawhi Leonard until last season, but that this whole thing really threw me for a loop with him. Because I got to tell you, he might be a top five player in the league, but if you can't count on your top five player in the league to play when he's cleared to play, that's a scary thing. But I think like those six guys, because you can put those six guys on a bad team and they instantly make a bad team a playoff team. You know, like that's how good those guys are. But they're like so elite, right? And then there's a pretty big drop off till the next group of players, like a Russell Westbrook. Who's MVP, he's great. But Russell Westbrook probably can't win a championship if he's your best player. And here's why. I actually have some credibility on this argument. Russell Westbrook does not shoot over 45% from the field. In fact, I'm pretty sure he never has. I'd have to go back and look. Maybe he's at a season or two. But I know for his career, he's under 45% by a good amount. Generally, he's about a 42, 43% shooter. I went back and looked like the last 35, it might have even been longer, it might have been like 40 years in the of the NBA, of the NBA champions. And no team has ever won an NBA championship in the last like 30 years or however long I look back where their star player shot under 45%. Teams have made it to the finals, so i.e. Allen Iverson, right? He took that Sixers team to the finals shooting under 45%. No teams ever won. So, like, Kobe's had a lot of seasons where he shot under 45% from the field. But in all the years they won championships without Shaq, he shot over 45%. So, in other words, your best player needs to be really efficient. Doesn't seem like rocket science, but the point would be made. You just can't win with a guy like Russell Westbrook as your star player. Blake Griffin shot 43% from the field last year. The other issue with Blake Griffin is he doesn't create his own shot ultra well. Like, I always get nervous, and especially in today's NBA, when your best player is a big. Because if your best player is a big, he likely has to rely on someone else to get him the ball, which is not good. Right? You want your star player, your elite, going to take us to the promised land championship player, to be able to bring the ball up and keep that ball. All right, so Durant, Curry, Harden, LeBron, right? I think those guys in particular, and even Giannis probably is in that category. He can play point guard. Like, he's got to be able to do it all, right? So I think it looks grim for the Pistons, basically what I'm saying. Just evaluating their roster in general. Yeah, we got the best rebound in the league. Blake Griffin's good. After that, we have a ton of question marks. Like, Reggie Bullock. Okay, spot up shooter. That's it. Can't do anything else. Bad defender. Can't put it on the deck. Kennard, who knows what Kennard's going to be. Really glad we took him over Donovan Mitchell. That was awesome. But once again, not trying to be that guy I spoke of earlier. Who would have ever thought Donovan Mitchell would be that good? Like, it's easy to look back, be like, man, what were we thinking? I got to tell you, when we took Kennard, I didn't think much of it. I was like, okay, yeah, he's a solid player. I thought the same thing about Donovan Mitchell. Like, either one, if we would have took him at the time, I just would have been like, okay, decent player. You know, probably going to give us 12 points a game for his career. There, no one, I hate how people try and act like they saw this Donovan Mitchell thing coming. Like, oh, yeah, how could you take Kennard over him? Everyone knew Mitchell was going to be a star. No, they didn't. That's why he didn't go in the top three. Like, gosh, we're just hindsight 2020 so much. But, you know. Reggie Jackson, don't like him at all. Don't like him at all. I don't like the volume shooters that shoot low percentage. It's like Brandon Jennings was that way. right? We get people that look at stats and they don't look at the right ones. Oh, he averages 18 points a game. Brandon Jennings, yeah, he's a good player. No, he's not. He shoots 39% from the field. He's actually a terrible player. He jacks up a lot of shots and misses a lot of them. If your team shoots 39%, you're not going to win. So why would you want a guy who is your leading scorer to shoot 39%? Give me a break. And Reggie Jackson's not much different from what Brandon Jennings was. So it's looking grim. I'm pretty depressed about it. Because I got to tell you, when the Chauncey and Rip and Ben days, man, was basketball fun to watch. I mean, I was tuning in to FSN Detroit, watching every game I could. Now, I watch like 3 Pistons games a year, and it's almost unbearable. So, anyways, I'll wrap things up. This has been my Skip Bayless version of an episode. Where I just decided to go off cuff a little bit and talk a little sports because I really enjoy talking about this stuff. Next week, we'll get back to talking golf and how to help your game improve. And maybe I'll have a guest. I gotta see what my next guest, I gotta coordinate a schedule with him, but it's gonna be a great one. Maybe it'll come next week. Maybe it'll be 2 weeks from now. We'll see. But anyways, this has been an episode of Bomb and Gouge. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next Monday at 7 a.m.